Okay, we're on live. Good morning. Welcome to the Appropriations Committee. Director, if you want to have a seat, and anyone else you want, and if you want to, basically how we'd like to do this, if you want to take a few minutes, tell us what's been going on in your agency or the past year, update us any information, those kind of things, any just opening comments, introduce your team. And then when you're finished, we'll just go through your budget kind of page by page, obviously with a little more explanation at the exception requests. And then members will just interrupt if they have questions. Representative Esquivel and I think Senator Dockstader will carry this budget on the floor. So we want to make sure, you know, if they meet with you or they have any other questions, those kind of things, that they get answered. So welcome, and the floor is yours.
Oh, before it.
Yeah.
And Mr. Chairman, before we do this, Senator Hastert, did you have something you were going to do this morning that, you know, sometimes these senators from Sweetwater County have, they get up really early and they got nothing on their mind, but kind of come on. Did you have something you were going to do this morning? Were you going to sing the... Turn your mic on. We can't hear you around the state of Wyoming, Senator Hastert.
We just thought we'd have some folks, you know, help us with opening with the Star Spangled Banner or something this morning. No, we don't have to do that.
Okay.
We had it all set up on.
You lead and we'll follow. Go ahead.
Actually, it's a wonderful thing, the Star Spangled Banner in our country. And
is there a flag here? Where's the flag? Mr. Chairman, thank you, Senator Hastert. Thank you.
The other thing, Mr. Chairman, is for you senators that may not realize this, that we're going to have a conference committee meeting, you know, and this was a tryout to see who had the best voices. And Senator Hastert, you and I, we're not going to make it. Senator Perkins, you and Senator Meyer might be in the running. I don't know. Anyway, that's...
If you'd like, us House members could submit a... secret ballot.
Yeah, just keep it to yourself.
Yeah. No, well done. That was nice.
Anyway, thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. Okay, Director Corsi, it's been a busy year for you, so go ahead. Floor is yours.
Yes, sir.
You do, please. Introduce yourself for the record. And this gets streamed live over the Internet and recorded, so...
So,
welcome.
So, Mr. Chairman, if I wasn't nervous enough already, that just adds to it.
There's probably 10 folks out in Wyoming listening to us. But, no, this depends on the issue, you know. There will be a lot of folks depending on the issue. So, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to thank the committee as well for, excuse me, for the opportunity to be here and to present our budget as recommended by the governor. I do want to take a moment. As you'll notice, I have... a new team member on my left. I want to take a moment to thank Paul Yaksik, who retired in September, for his 18 years of service to the Department of Family Services, his 23 years of service to the state of Wyoming, and his additional 20-plus years of service to the United States as a retired lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Army. Paul was instrumental in the preparation of this budget And I just want to make sure we give him credit for that.
Sure.
And for all those, for all that wonderful service. On my left is Nick Baird. Nick did a stint at DFS, probably a year ago or so. And when Paul retired in September, Nick came back from the private sector in September from the banking industry. One of the things that I've heard Nick say a number of times is he likes finding money. So Nick was with me in a previous life and did a wonderful job. Senator Dockstader may know him. He did a wonderful job. Our organization at that point, around the time he started, I believe we had about $450,000 in reserve. We were, in Nick's words, hemorrhaging money, and probably in danger of closing, certainly of laying a bunch of people off. And by the time Nick and I left, we had about $2 million in reserve. We had retired all debt. We had quadrupled the revenue base and I believe tripled the size of the organization and expanded services. A lot of that goes to Nick's financial wisdom and credit. I know he looks young, but he's wise beyond his years. So with that, I'd like to move into some highlights over the last year of the department. The first one is, I believe we reported this last year, and I want to report it again because it's significant, and that is that the Child Support Enforcement Division of our department is number one across all 53 states and territories. We're sitting in the number one position. We've been sitting there for, I believe, over a year now, and obviously want to stay in that slot. Number two, when I came on board as the director in March of 2011, we had a supplemental nutrition assistance program error rate of 14.13%. In fact, in my first briefing with the governor, I said, "Governor, I have good news and I have bad news. The bad news is we're the worst in the country. The good news is we can only get better from there." I'm pleased to report to this committee today that we're now at 4.99%. We've improved by almost 10%. And are continuing to improve and will continue that process. Third and fourth are the Wyoming Boys School and the Wyoming Girls School. At each institution, we have about 15% recidivism. And I know that that was mentioned to this committee last year, and I believe that still needs to be mentioned. That's a phenomenal recidivism rate, that 85% of the students who go through those institutions do not return to either that institution or a higher level of care. At the boys' school, the average student is there for about 6 months. During that time, they experience a 3.1-year grade level improvement in math, a 2.1-year grade level improvement in reading, and a 2.7-year grade level improvement in written language. Again, phenomenal. At the girls' school, the average student is there for about 8.4 months. They experience a 0.7 year grade level improvement in reading, and we need to take a look at that, and a 3.1-year grade level improvement in math. For some reason, we don't have the written language improvement, so I can't report on that this morning. The fifth highlight that...
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead, Ms. Co-Chair.
Yeah, before you leave the girls' school and boys' school, do they still have the military attitude and approach that they deal with up there and how they treat those young kids coming into the system?
Mr. Chairman? Mr. Co-Chair, at the girls' school, they do not. The girls' school is very much, in my mind, as a former provider, it's very much a residential treatment center type of focus. It's very supportive. The boys' school, Senator, I would characterize as a little more paramilitary, but that approach has been softening over the last year. And, in fact, we're making kind of a cultural shift to more of a residential treatment model at the boys.
Mr. Chairman, but there's discipline and regimentation in what they do. They get up. They don't sleep in. I mean, they get up and early, and they gotta clean their rooms and all the basic things every young kid should be doing. And I know I've heard stories about the girls' school that they stick to those kind of things. That's all still going on, is it not?
Yes, sir.
So it's regimented in the sense that, you know, they have schedules, they have things to do, and it's just not a place where they go hang out, obviously.
No,
okay,
sir.
Thank you.
No, sir. In fact, at the boys' school, a little bit different. At the boys' school, they do PT, physical training.
A lot of physical training.
Yes, sir, twice a day. And, in fact, when we get into our exception requests, we you will notice that we're eliminating the federal school lunch program. And I think we mentioned this to the committee last year. We have hungry boys and we have hungry girls because of the intensity of the physical exercise, but we'll talk about that later.
You know, that's been an issue on this committee. We've talked with the Department of Ed, certainly, too, where you, United States of America, you can't even have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich anymore.
Which is
crazy, but probably won't be long for our whole system opts out. Now, there's several questions. You struck a nerve there. So I see Representative Burkhart, and I think there's others coming around here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And actually, it wasn't about the lunches.
Yeah.
Director Corsi, just an idea. You said the kids have improved in grade level performance. How far down do they are they generally when they come in? Are they down a grade level or two? Or?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burkhart, I don't know the answer to that. I have a number in my head. I'm hesitant to say it because I don't know that it's accurate, and I'd like to not misinform this committee. We would be happy to get that information correctly and report it back to you.
Mr. Chairman, just a general idea. I'm not looking for real specifics. I just want, you know, if they're a grade level down and they go up, you know, 1.5 grade levels, that's great.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burkhart, I believe that the number, as I recall, and we will get the correct information, but the number, as I recall, is they're at least a year and a half behind grade level.
Thank you.
Hey, Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I love the idea that you're getting those kids good food. Thank you. But what my question was about the educational program that you utilize. I mean, that's remarkable that you're able to bring these kids along. And I know part of it is what Senator Bebout was bringing, is just making sure that they have a good routine and that they're doing those things. But are you utilizing any particular, you know, individualized student program or something that, because my hunch, not being an educator, is that some of these kids are likely kids that do not do well with the standard educational program in traditional schools. So what are you doing different than would happen in a regular school?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wallace, boy, that's a great question, and it's probably a very long and complicated answer. Some of the, I would say the first thing we do is we're incredibly picky about the teachers that we hire. We select carefully. One of our philosophies is don't hire anybody unless you can't live without them. We don't hire people in the department to fill a position. We only hire them if we can't live without them. The hiring of teachers is probably the first place that serves us well. With regard to specific curriculums or programs, the education is very individualized at both institutions. Kids can attend traditional coursework, can or will, as Senator Bebout mentioned. They don't have a whole lot of choices. It's very disciplined at both institutions. But they can attend traditional coursework. They can also do college classes. I know at the girls' school, for those of you who aren't aware, we have probably one of the most amazing history teachers in the state, and she has the girls help her with archiving, and she's archived much of the Wyoming Girls' School history with the girls to the point that you could probably take 3 or 4 hours to go through the historical documents, the pieces of hand-carved banister that came out of original buildings, fireplace mantles. I mean, it's just phenomenal. And they do a lot of that kind of hands-on learning that I think, as a former school psychologist, lends itself well to rapid advancement.
Representative Stubson.
And Mr. Chairman and Director Corsi, just, you know, I don't have a great deal of familiarity with your programs, and I kind of have in my mind's eye how kids end up at the Boys and Girls School, but can you just speak kind of briefly on a basic level of who's making that decision and what's the criteria for kids that end up there?
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
Representative Stupson, that's also a fairly complicated question, but the simple version, I suppose, would be those kids who arrive there are court-ordered. They don't come in without a judge's order, and typically those are the toughest of the tough. The average, I know at the boys' school, I don't know what this is at the girls' school off the top of my head, but I know the average male student at the boys' school has blown out of at least six other placements before they arrive at the boys' school. So as I think about your question, Representative Wallace, it deserves a little study on our part, because we're taking the toughest of the tough, in some ways the worst of the worst, and yet they're phenomenally improving academically, and we need to take a look at that. So, but Representative Stupson primarily, well, not primarily, they're all court-ordered.
Okay. Representative Wallace.
You mentioned that PT was a big part of the program at the boys' school. Is that not also the case at the girls' school? I would, you know, just knowing the connection, physical fitness and mind, it seems like that would be a good program for the girls too, I guess is what my point.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, go ahead. Sure.
Representative Wallace, it is also I wouldn't say a big part, but an essential part of the curriculum and the program at the girls' school. Not as intense as the boys' school. As I mentioned, the boys' school has a little more paramilitary focus, to the point that for those of you who have not been there, when the boys move from one location to the next, they kind of line up on the wall, left shoulder to the left wall, hands in their pockets or folded or crossed in front of them, and they move silently to their next location. Which is a very military kind of movement. It's not as disciplined at the girls' school, but it still is disciplined.
Hey, any other? You know, I've had a lot of kids over the years who've come back, you know, from Worland and reintegrated into my classroom and other into our school, there's a couple common denominators. When they come back, it's all discipline. I mean, it's all yes sir, no sir. I mean, you can tell the impact. And the real challenge, like anybody, I mean, it's you got who your friends are important, really, and who you associate with, and particularly at that age, kids, boys who are 17, 18, but. You know, and it's not true for all, but a lot of the common denominators I've seen of these guys, they're just functional families. You know, these guys have been running wild for a long time, done a lot of stuff, and many of them are really sharp guys, smart guys, care less about school for the most part, and can hang with the wrong crowd. So, you know, I don't know. It's a part of that. I'm glad to hear the recidivism rate, that piece of that. My question really was, after that editorial, was, just really your numbers at both institutions in Sheridan and Worland, and how does that compare to 10 years ago? You know, we've done some capital construction at Sheridan. We built a new dorm there, I think, in the last few years. Is that right? Done some things. So, because I know you have a CapCon request. I know we'll get to that, but just tell us the number of folks being served there today.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, and thank you for taking a little extra time, because I had two other When you started the talk, I had two other things that I wanted to mention to you, and now I've forgotten them, so that's probably a good thing.
Oh, they'll come to you, I'm sure.
Mr. Chairman, currently at the boys' school, we have 72 students. I'm not sure exactly how that compares to 10 years ago.
Yeah, maybe give us your all-time high on that and how it's trended, I guess, is what we'd like to see the last 10 years.
I'm not sure what the all-time high has been, Mr. Chairman, but this past summer we did hit, I believe it was 97.
Yeah.
It was either 97 or 98. That was too many. It's designed for 88.
Okay.
And we hit 97 or 98. At the girls' school, it's designed for 64. We have a current enrollment of 22,
yeah.
Which initially is a little bit alarming. And we've talked about, and we've talked with this committee about looking at, and we continue to look at different ways to utilize that that facility and both facilities effectively, both from a cost standpoint and from a programmatic standpoint. Somebody, and by the way, 22 is, we just had, I believe it was 13 discharges. So really it was about 35, and now it's at about 22. One of the things that we're looking at within the department is whether we have a female population, whether we need to expand this to the use of other female students, as opposed to just the juvenile females. We're not sure that. I think we've had a high of, I don't know, 45 or something like that. I'm just guessing at that. I seem to remember the number 45 during my tenure. And so there is a kind of a cyclical move at both institutions. The girls' school is a little less utilized than the boys' school. I would like to point out to the committee an analogy. And I don't recall, I think it was Nick, our CFO, who brought this up, or maybe it was one of the school superintendents. And they said, I said I was concerned about the 22 at the girls' school. Actually, I think it was the superintendent. And she said, you know, see, the staff and the institution are firemen who are standing at the window ready to catch these kids who can't be served elsewhere. And that's an important thing for us to remember. At the same time, we need to also figure out a way to more effectively utilize that overall institution. Specifically Sheridan.
Right. Okay. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director Corsi, you know, I guess I'm just getting older. Sometimes when I think of kids, you know, I think of my daughters who are in their mid-20s now. And are we kind of age-restricted on how old these kids can be at the girls' school? Is it 18 and then we have to do something else with them?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Esquivel, I do believe it is 18. I believe that if they come in, is that correct, Nick? I do believe that if they come in prior to their 18th birthday, that they can stay there for the completion of the program, which, as I mentioned earlier, is about 8.4 months. But I don't think we can, it wouldn't make sense for us to put 19-year-olds in there. They would go to prison. They would go up to LUSC.
And just to follow up, Mr. Sure. Chairman, then by them having to go to LUSC, is that under our federal guidelines?
Mr. Chairman? Representative Esquivel, I'm not sure I understand the question.
Well, what prevents us from keeping 19- and 20-year-olds or 21-year-olds at the girls' school? Is it state statute or is...
Mr. Chairman, Representative Esquivel, we would need to look into that. I believe that the institutions did used to keep kids until they were 21, and my father will probably slap me when I tell this story, but when he was 16 and lied about his age, said he was 17, he went into the Marine Corps, and that's because here in Wyoming he was in front of a judge who said, you have two choices. You can go to the Wyoming Reform School for Boys until you're 21, or you can go into the U.S. Marines. And he said, well, I've always wanted to be a Marine.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, I think I remember hearing that story from the director before.
So I do know that they used to be able to hold them until they're 21. I don't believe that we can do that anymore.
Well, just what's your personal feedback, Mr. Chairman, about maybe... You said you wanted to utilize that school more, and I know we do have young ladies that are in trouble that could use our help there, and raising that age would certainly allow you to utilize that school more.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Esquivel, I appreciate that question a lot. Because as I heard it, and a couple of thoughts flashed through my mind. There are probably a number of girls who are 18, 19, or 20 who dropped out of school, didn't complete high school. They didn't complete high school because, and maybe in trouble with the system, the judicial system or the legal system. They didn't complete high school because they didn't have the support and discipline, as we talked about earlier, maybe at home and in their communities. And I certainly would not be opposed to that. I don't know if Nick's already done it, but if Nick, I'd like Nick to take that question down and would love to talk with our AGs about that possibility. Now, on the other hand, I think when you introduce more students of a majority age, I guess is how you would say that, 18, 19, 20, that will change the dynamic a little bit for the other girls, say the 13 and 14-year-olds. So we would have to, you know, we would have to go through that carefully, but that's a not at all a bad idea to take a look at, and we will do that, whether the committee asks us to or not. It's a good idea, at least to look at and examine.
Hey, any other questions, comments? Okay, continue. I'm sure you remembered those other two things.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I sticking with our highlights here for just a moment, I'll try to speed it up for all of our sake, I guess. The fifth highlight that we want to point out is our focus on improved customer service within the department. We have we've been making a fairly intense effort, as commented on to the committee last year. We put every employee, including myself, through formal customer service training. It was 3 or 4 hours, something like that, across the state. And we've continued to provide training in customer service and technical assistance in customer service with our state offices or our field offices across the state. What I want to report to the committee is that our complaints have gone down, both at the governor's office and at the department. So we know it's working, and we're not going to let up. We're going to be relentless with that. Chief of Staff Kerry Gray is fond of saying, certainly Wyoming citizens deserve better than this. And that's the attitude that we want our employees to have, that Wyoming citizens deserve the best we have to offer. We're here for them. The sixth highlight is, as many of you may be aware, the governor placed homelessness within the Department of Family Services this past summer. I think it was in June. For the first time in the history of Wyoming, homelessness has a home within state government. And we in the department have assigned 2.5 FTEs to that effort. And I can am pleased to report to the committee that that effort is proceeding well. There's a lot of work to do, but there's a lot of work that's already been done. And for those of you who know her, Brenda Little, our child support enforcement administrator, is the one who's heading up those efforts. She's number one in the country in child support enforcement, and obviously we're looking forward to that kind of leadership in homelessness. And then the last two items in our highlights are early childhood collaboration and clinical services. We have been holding meetings across the state. As this committee is probably aware, there have been some difficulties in child care and the whole early childhood arena. And we've been making concerted efforts to hold meetings across the state with providers, sometimes with legislators, sometimes with not, or not with legislators, also with stakeholders, parents, and other interested parties, and that work will continue. We've made a number of changes as a result of that work, and we'll continue to do that. In the clinical services arena, I know that I've reported to the committee before that we were changing the business model just a bit. In the past, the department has purchased services for children and families much on the honor system, if not entirely on the honor system. We don't believe that that was a good or effective model, and we have added Dr. Marty Nelson. Some of you have met him to our team, and Dr. Nelson is now, he and his staff are reviewing treatment plans and services that children and families are receiving in order to ensure that, number one, that we're getting what we are purchasing, and number two, that those services are quality. and that he's beginning to focus on outcomes as well as we do across the rest of the department. Mr. Chairman, if it pleases the committee, I would like to walk the committee through the two appropriations that we have. Just a quick, some quick comments on the two appropriations. The first of those is our services appropriation. In this appropriation, we have the director's unit, the protective services unit, our crisis beds, juvenile probation or juvenile services, the Wyoming Boys School and the Wyoming Girls School, the Children's Trust Fund Board, and the Substance Abuse Prevention and Treatment Unit. In the assistance appropriation, we have the Welfare Reform Unit, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, Child Support Enforcement, Supplemental Security Income, Early Childhood Development, and the Energy Assistance and Weatherization Program, or unit. And I may have missed, I don't recall if I said in the first one that the Substance Abuse Prevention and Treatment Unit's also up in the first appropriation.
And you have a little CapCon.
Yes, sir.
You're going to talk about your CapCon at the end, and I'm sure there'll be questions.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So you're going to start then on page, or are you still in a general overall?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
I will speed it up if we need to.
No, you're good. I just want we want to know where you're. You're good.
There are a few 4 points, Mr. Chairman, that I'd like to bring the committee's attention to regarding this budget presentation and proposal. We have $26.5 million in exception requests. $23.3 million of those are for one-time funding. $13.1 million, excuse me, is for the new school building at the Wyoming Boys School. $9.6 million is for the Wyoming Eligibility System, Phase 2, and that is to tie us in with the Wyoming Department of Health's Wyoming Eligibility System, Phase 1, which is for Medicaid. We had, in 2010, we had 812 employees. You'll notice today that we're making no request for additional employees. In fact, we're currently requesting 719. That's a reduction of 93 since 2010 and 60 less than we requested 2 years ago. At the same time, we've experienced decreased complaints. We've experienced feedback on improved customer service, and we are continuing the work on offering additional services through engagement with providers such as the lady sitting behind us. We've also added homelessness during that time by utilizing existing resources, the 2.5 FTEs mentioned earlier.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director, cutting those positions, how's the workload for the staff look? You know, you're recommending cutting 12 positions. Just curious.
Mr. Chairman. Representative Burkhart, we did the staff reductions in a very methodical way. We analyzed caseloads, both on the assistance side for eligibility workers and on the social services side for social service workers. Also, we adjusted our supervisor-to-employee ratio. Those ratios were all over the board a few years ago, and we've put into place an 8-to-1 model, 8 workers, which is a standard business model, 8 workers for one supervisor, a number of supervisors for a manager, et cetera. We believe that the workloads are manageable. When I came into the department, as I traveled the state to our 27 offices across the state, I would often hear that the caseloads were too high. In some cases, they were, and in some cases, they were too low. We've also implemented a caseload standard, basically, of 18-to-1, which is a fairly accepted national standard, and we're continually looking at that to make sure that that is working. Our safety record in protective services remains fantastic. We're one of the best in the country, and obviously we want to stay there, and we will stay there. And we'll make adjustments accordingly. The 12 employees representative that I believe that you're talking about that are reduced in the budget are moving to the department. Well, actually, they already did move to the Department of Health because the Medicaid eligibility has shifted back to the Department of Health. Did I answer your question, sir?
Yes, Director. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director Corsi, along those lines, so you actually are doing more with less, obviously. And when you talk about better customer service and early childhood collaboration with providers, when someone calls your department and leaves a message if they don't get to talk to a live person, what's your response time in getting back?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Esquivel, I don't know the answer to that, but you've touched on one of my personal, I don't know how else to say it, personal pet peeves, and that is that all phone calls will be returned within 24 hours. And I can tell you that I'm a little embarrassed to admit I've violated that four times in my tenure as director, and I feel bad about each one of those four. We have recently instituted in the PMI system, the basically the evaluations and the goals system for state employees within the assistance appropriation, we've instituted PMI goals around phone calls being returned within a 24-hour period and have instituted a system to measure that. We didn't have a way to measure that before, so I can't definitively answer your question, but I can tell you that there were a number of instances where that was being violated. I can also tell you that many of those where it was being violated were repeat offenders, and they've been offered the opportunity to work somewhere else.
Mr. Chairman, just to follow up, and it's on a completely different issue, one of the issues I heard about was that we had got rid of our statewide resource and referral system.
Mr. Chairman,
that was a surprise to me to hear that. Did we change it, or what happened there?
Representative Esquivel, we did change that. We did not get rid of that, nor did we ever intend to get rid of that. We did change that. We brought that in-house. I don't recall if I mentioned this to the committee, but when we examined that, I'll get these numbers incorrect, but they're within a ballpark, I guess. As I recall, we were spending, I think it was $1.2 million a biennium on the resource and referral system that was contracted out to an outside entity. As we took a look at that, we discovered that there were five or six other places that you could get the same information very easily, one of which was within the department, a couple of which were within the department. And when we examined the cost for that, I believe what we came up with was for an average five-minute phone call, we were paying that the person in the resource and referral system would have with an outside client, we were paying about $230 per five-minute phone call. That didn't seem like a good use of taxpayer money, and especially when you could get that same information in a multitude of other places. So we brought that in-house, and we're continuing to work on that, but as far as I am aware, that's going well. It was an adjustment period, but it is going well.
Okay, and then finally, Mr. Chairman, as you move through your budget and you get to talk about your STARS program, is that something you have planned to talk about?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Esquivel, it was not, but I'm happy to do that.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Senator Meyer. I noticed we in the 6900 series we were spending a little over $200,000 going to community colleges. Could you at some point in time just kind of tell us what that training program's about? It's training for youth or something.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, I believe that that, and I may have Nick speak to that. Are you prepared to speak to that? I believe that that is funding that we're, TANF funding that we're moving to the Department of Workforce Services, who contracts with the community colleges. And I believe that's part of the ETSS program, and I'm trying to think of what that, oh, employment training and self-sufficiency. As part of their training program in moving people towards self-sufficiency, getting them the skills necessary, people who are utilizing the system of government services, getting them trained and skilled enough to.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
The reason I bring that up, I've got a couple rural districts in my Senate district, and specifically they were trying to figure out how they could get their high school to go on a two-track system where someplace in their sophomore or junior year, if they weren't the college track through Hathaway, that we could figure out a funding mechanism to fund a lot more vocational training and things like that to keep them in school, lower the dropout rate, and push these kids on a different track. And I told them I thought we could do TANF funds, and this looks like that. So at some point in time, maybe we'll have a more in-depth discussion so I can show those folks in that district how they might be able to utilize those funds.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Meyer, we would welcome any discussion that you would like to have along those lines. Yes, sir.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, one more thing.
Okay, Representative Esquivel.
And then Director Corsi, the only other thing I really want to touch on before you get deep in your budget is just to get some feedback from you is some of the pressures being put on daycare providers and early childhood development as far as what you're seeing within your department. Do you notice now that you're having more of the two-parent households, both parents are working, and then, of course, in your single-parent households, are we adding more pressure to that system?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Esquivel, I believe that those numbers are, and this is my initial thought. Nick is taking notes, and we'll look into that deeper. But I believe that that system is staying fairly flat, staying fairly level. We're serving about 5,500, give or take 100 or two, I suppose, in any given month, serving about 5,500 across the state. As to the demographics of that, whether they are two-parent or one-parent, or we've seen shifts in that, there again, that's a great question, and I wish I knew the answer to that, but I don't. But we will look into it and get it, because I'd like to know that now that you've raised it.
And Mr. Chairman, sure. I think we have asked this question with at least our local school boards, and it's probably close to the same in early childhood development, that it's about 30% of the students in the state of Wyoming are coming from single-parent households.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Esquivel, that actually surprises me a little bit. As a former school psychologist, I would expect that number to be quite a little higher than that, probably in the 40 to 50% range.
Yeah, well, that was just at our local school board. So statewide, I'd like to kind of know, you know. And I'm just one of those big believers, you know, kids do better in a two-parent household. So,
absolutely, sir.
Okay. Continue.
Mr. Chairman, a couple of other points, that broad overview points that we would like the committee to notice as we move through the presentation. During the 13-14 biennium, the legislature approved $161.7 million in general fund for the department. Today we're requesting 152.8 in our standard budget request. This represents an $8.9 million decrease in general fund, and we're doing that primarily, and have done that primarily, through IT consolidation, employee reductions, and service cost reductions without reducing services to Wyoming citizens. Our total budget request today is $3.5 million higher than was approved 2 years ago. However, that also includes $26.5 million in exceptions for the 15-16 biennium. Mr. Chairman, We are continuing to honor the commitment that I made to Governor Mead and the people of Wyoming to look for efficiencies and improvements in service to Wyoming citizens. Part of that commitment has been to not bring exception requests for increases unless they met one of two criteria, and those are modernization of technology or an emergency, which obviously is an unplanned event. We think this budget reflects that commitment. And with that, we'd like to move into the budget.
Very good.
If the committee would, Mr. Chairman, move to page 5. This is the broad overview narrative of the department.
You know, and maybe, Director, page 4 gives you kind of the numbers broad overview. And then we'll, everybody can take a look at the big picture and then moving on to page 5. Okay? Go ahead. I won't interrupt you now. Try not to, anyway.
Mr. Chairman, you're certainly always welcome. On page 5, I want to point out an error. In the basic facts section of the narrative, you'll notice under funding that it says $270,408,078. That number should actually be $295,099,578. Those numbers will be wrong in the narratives throughout the budget. However, the budget numbers in the C sheets are correct. So if you're looking at the budget sheets with all the dollars, those are accurate. The narrative operating dollars will not be.
Did LSO Fiscal catch that mistake?
Mr. Chairman, I believe we caught that mistake.
Okay.
Is that correct?
Nobody's keeping score, though. But
Mr. Chairman, okay. It's important to me that we caught that mistake because that gives us credit there. We should have. It should have never happened, and that's my fault.
It happened. Okay, thank you. Could you repeat that $295 million number?
Yes, sir.
$295,099,578. Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative.
Mr. Chairman and Director Corsi, on your employee count, the 12, that was the ETS consolidation, if I remember. And then the two, just the other two positions, just point those out when you get to that point in your budget as well.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Esquivel, which two?
It's the two under the governor's recommended changes.
What page?
On page 4. Because you're down a total of 14 employees, right?
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, go ahead.
Representative Esquivel, we will be down 14 employees in this budget, and we will be covering employee moves and reductions as we move through each unit.
Okay.
I would like to clarify, though, that the 12 that you're commenting on, I believe, went to the Wyoming Department of Health, but we'll be talking about that.
Okay.
In our second appropriation.
Thank you.
Okay.
So if we can move to page 10, this is the summary sheet of our exception requests, and I'd like to walk the committee through this fairly quickly because we'll be covering individual exceptions within each unit. The first exception request is within our medical eligibility unit, and that's for a $1.6 million reduction. The second request is in our early childhood unit, 6020, and that's for a $1.9 million reduction in general fund with a corresponding increase in federal spending authority, TANF spending authority specifically. The third exception is in our SNAP unit, and you'll see that that's $13.9 million, half of which is general fund and half of which is federal. That's for the Wyoming Eligibility System Phase 2 to modernize our eligibility system and plug into the Department of Health. Lines 4, 5, and 6, you'll notice our computer software. That's in the first one is our Juvenile Services Unit, the second is our Child Support Enforcement Unit, and the third is our SNAP Unit, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance. For $283,000, $311,000, and $95,000, respectively, This funding is for maintenance contracts for YCAPS, which is our Wyoming Child Abuse Prevention System, and also for POSSE, which is the system we use for child support enforcement, payments, collections, and enforcement issues. It's for Microsoft to run SQL servers, for Microsoft Excel for our fiscal services division and field offices and programs. It's for check writing software for POSSE, and miscellaneous software packages for daily operations throughout the department. It also includes our J.P. Morgan contractual services for the SNAP program, which, if you're familiar with that, are the EBT cards, the electronic benefits cards that SNAP recipients use at the grocery store.
Go ahead, Senator Meyer.
There was an article the other day on TV where those cards from Maine were being used clear down in Florida at Disneyland and stuff. Now, do we have any restrictions on ours to where, or what are our restrictions on our electronic benefits cards?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, I'm glad you asked that question. I wish that we had more authority as a state to put some restrictions on those cards, but we don't. Those are we're very limited in our ability to do much with them. Those are federal guidelines and laws that provide for that administration, and they're very, very strict and clear about what is allowed and what is not. I can tell you that we monitor the out-of-state use of those cards carefully, and to date, I don't recall any cases where we had incorrect or inappropriate use of those cards out-of-state. Primarily, the out-of-state use tends to be right around the borders of Wyoming, Denver, Fort Collins, Billings, Montana, Salt Lake City down in the southwest corner. I think, Senator Meyer, that we run one of the best SNAP programs in the country with exception of that error rate. And we're, as I mentioned, we're rapidly improving that.
Just to follow up, Mr.
Chairman. Yeah, sure.
Can they use those at an ATM like it was reported for the main cards?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, in Wyoming, I believe the answer to that is no. In fact, I'm 98% sure that the answer to that is no. You mean to get cash?
Just get cash.
No. Yeah, no, sir. No, sir. Not in Wyoming. I don't know how other states operate, but not in Wyoming.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Go ahead. Continue.
Oh. Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, I just got corrected. I was about to move on, and we haven't even finished that page. So still on page 10, the next exception, priority number 7, is our web enhancement project. This is an exception request for $520,000. This will allow us to provide 24-hour service to our clients, which we can't do currently. We serve them primarily between 8 and 5, Monday through Friday. We'll be able to provide them with 24-hour service that is web-based. They'll be able to check their account balances, what they owe, what they've been paid, and other information. The priority number 8 is for the new school building at the Wyoming Boys School, and that exception is $13.1 million. Priority number 9 is 2 lines, and it's for $140,000 decrease in unit 6020 and a corresponding increase in unit 5904. These exception requests are for the purposes of appropriately aligning our appropriation with the services and where those services are supervised. Line or priority 10 is 4 lines, as you'll notice. And there are 2 figures, $340,527 in decreases and in increases, and then below that, $237,035 in increases and decreases also. And this is related to the elimination of the federal funding for the school lunch program at the 2 institutions, the Wyoming Boys School and the Wyoming Girls School. As mentioned to this committee before, we've found that this program to be overly restrictive, have very stringent requirements, be labor-intensive for our staff, and leave kids hungry. And we've found a way within existing resources within our budget to eliminate that and make sure that our kids are fed. We'd now like to move into the 590 appropriation, and we would begin that on page 16. This is our first unit, unit 59. Actually, I missed a unit. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to back the committee up to page 14, unit 5901. This is the director's unit, and if you'll look at the bottom of that page, you'll see that there are no exception requests in this unit. Then I'd like to move the committee to page 16, unit 5902. This is our protective services unit, and to give just a few statistics, this unit serves children and adults who are at risk of abuse and neglect, seeking to ensure their safety, permanency, and well-being. During fiscal 13, the program provided services to 10,444 children. The agency responded to an average of 650 intakes per month. The agency received an average of 134 adult protection referrals per month in state fiscal year 13, and serves approximately 1,375 child protection cases and 152 adult protection cases in any given month.
You know, Director, just to back up to page 15 of that on the Director's Division, there's no exception request, but just looking at the salaries, I'm looking at code 103, base budget to standard budget. Can you explain the changes there?
Mr. Chairman, that looks like about a $13,000 change. And I'm kind of looking for Laura over here. I believe that $13,000 difference would be when the state moved employees to the 91% of MPP. My guess is that that's where that occurred. Is that correct, Laura?
Correct.
Mr. Chairman, I think we would have to look into the background to see exactly what's occurred here, and we can do that if the committee would like us to do so, but we don't know the answer to that right off the top of our heads.
Okay. Yeah, I get that. Mr. Co-Chair?
And Mr. Chairman, while you're doing that, the benefits went down by about 50%, and that's probably something to do with insurance, but if you could explain that one.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chair, you might recall how we've split out the health insurance funding from that overall object code, so it's reflected in the line below.
Okay. Okay. Well, there's two folks in that, two employees in that unit, and it's a pretty good increase. So we just wanted to see how that. I didn't know that we'd funded any increases. Okay. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, one of those employees is me. The other one is a legal assistant who runs my life, Elaine Brown. And I'm pretty sure that that's due to that 91% adjustment. And I'd love to have a conversation with you about that offline.
Okay, next.
Moving to page 17. You'll notice about halfway down the page that the governor has made a recommendation for a reduction in funding and one full-time position. This position was vacant for around 23 months and was one of the frozen positions. This was an SOS P11, a supervising program manager, and we concur, obviously, with that recommendation. At the bottom of that page, Section 3, Priority Number 4, this is our first exception request, and we're requesting $283,000 in supportive services for computer software. If you look at the third line of that paragraph, it says that this software is used in computer system servers, networks, and employee computers, and this is in the Wyoming Child Abuse Prevention System. On page 18.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Yeah, before we leave that page, and I'm on page 17, you know, you've got that budget for the for child support runs about between 57 and 60 million, roughly. That's what I'm looking at, 11, 12, 13, 14, and then 15, 16 for a, and that's for a biennium. And when I look at the your 600 series, mm-hmm. your 600 series, and I just saw children and families, COPS, COPS payments, I'm sure that's the same thing. When I add them up for, it looks like it's a full year, you know, we're under that by about $10 million. Is that a timing issue on how the money's spent? You know, under the, I'm looking at the object code 620, 21, 22, 23, and 24. On your 600 series. So you could get back to me on that. I'm just curious why it looks like that's for the full year, yet we're, you know, looks like we're maybe 15, 20% under the budget. And I'm wondering if it's a timing issue.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chair, one thing that I would want to point out is the comment that I made earlier that the operating budget numbers within the narratives are incorrect. So my assumption is that this 57 920,903 is probably incorrect. But
Mr. Chairman, I'm not looking for what's going to happen in your projections. I'm looking for what you did in spending based on your 600 series that I just went through and why it looks like it's quite a bit under. And I think it's probably a timing issue, but that's all I was curious about.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, go ahead.
Mr. Co-Chair, those numbers are year-to-date, or biennium-to-date, excuse me. They don't include the final 6 months of this biennium. Those numbers are through December. I believe it's on there December 13, is that right? December 16 of 2013.
So you've got $10 million left
to June
30th.
That is correct.
You've got $10 million left to June 3rd, so it is a timing issue.
Correct.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And you, yep.
Mr. Chairman, on page 17, we covered the first exception. If we can move to page 18, I'd like to point out under the governor's recommendation that this exception has been approved by multiple OCIO recommendations. Priority number 10, right below that, is our next exception request. And as you'll recall, this was the one from our summary sheet, lines 10, 10, 10, and 10, where there is money kind of moving back and forth. What we're requesting here is to decrease our general fund by $237,035 and increase our federal funding by $237,035. Basically, we want to move $237,000 in general fund out of this unit into the Wyoming Girls School to offset the loss of federal funds as we eliminate that federal lunch program at the girls' school. You'll see a corresponding request that is a little higher. I think it's $340,000. I think it's $547,000, something like that, in the juvenile services unit, and that will correspond to the Wyoming Boys School. I hope that kind of explains this. Basically, we'll move the federal funding out of the girls' school. We'll backfill that with general funding out of this unit, and then increase our federal funding. And, in fact, I forgot to mention that to you, how that will work. That will be through the 4E program, which is a program that provides services to foster care children. We had a Casey Family Foundation review a while back. I don't recall exactly when that was. And they identified a number of recommendations for us that if we did things a little bit different, we could capture additional federal funding. And with that in mind, we'd like to move this general fund and not ask the committee for any additional dollars.
Yep. Mr. Chairman, just to simplify that, what you're doing is you've got a program that's in general fund dollars, and you're going to remove it and replace it with federal funds because you found a way to better facilitate what you're trying to accomplish as an agency, correct?
Yes, sir, basically.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Representative Escobar.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director Corsi, can you give us a one-pager that kind of shows these revenue changes for both schools with just another small explanation when we go to present your budget, and if any questions arise, we can easily explain that, show that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Esquibel, I am happy to do that, or we are happy to do that. I hate to tell you the inside secrets, but we've changed our presentation format with this probably 30 times because it's somewhat confusing, and yet it's relatively simple all at the same time. But when you see the numbers side by side, all of a sudden it looks like there's a shell game going on, and there isn't. So we would be happy to do that.
Okay. Okay, continue.
Mr. Chairman.
Sure. Go ahead.
If we can move to page 22, this is our next unit in this appropriation, 5903. This is our community crisis beds. This program, which is legislatively mandated, by the way, this program serves 2,220 children annually by 12 crisis providers. And I've mentioned them before, but one of our crisis providers is behind us here. These crisis providers, bed providers, have contracts for the availability of 81 beds at $97 per day. If you'll flip to page 23, you'll notice that we have no exception request for this unit.
Senator Meyer?
Question is on your providers. And I'm not sure the correct terminology, but open enrollment or there's no discrimination, or do you have some providers, if they get a client that they necessarily think might be problematic, they just say, for whatever reason, no, you don't qualify, go down to the next provider?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer,
I'm wondering if they're cherry-picking, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Senator, I don't believe that they are. The providers behind me are from Cathedral Homes, and I believe they could probably answer that better than I could. However, what I can tell you is that crisis beds are regionally located. So they are very good. The providers across the state are very good about taking kids who are in crisis. I'm not aware of any case where a kid was turned away unless the kid was absolutely inappropriate and needed a higher level of care, maybe violent or a danger to themselves or somebody else. But I'm not aware of any youth that's been turned away from a crisis provider.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I guess a follow-up is that, and if you have a kid that's deemed inappropriate because of the level of care that needs a higher level of care, where do they end up?
That's a great question. Trying to sort through that in my head, Senator. My guess is, and it's somewhat of an educated guess, that they would end up in either a residential treatment center, they may end up in a juvenile detention center, one of the four that we have across, not we, the state, but that are available across the state until they could go to hearing and until an MDT or an evaluation could be convened to make sure that they're placed in the right setting. I hope I'm answering your question.
Yeah, I think so. I guess it might be appropriate, Mr. Chairman, that perhaps, you know, we kind of keep an eye on that in some way to track the kids that are turned away from different providers and the reasons for them if they are, and you know, just to see if it, at any time there might be some kind of an abusive policy that one institution may have over another one, just to make sure that from my perspective, if you're getting state dollars, you know, it's an open enrollment. Whoever shows up at your door, you have to admit them, and that you can't do cherry picking. But I don't know.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. I think going back before we leave that, I think let's just see if we can get some clarification on that. I mean, what we've got is we've got a policy of least restrictive placement, and so we've got a crisis center. So why don't, if you could, Mr. Chairman, I'd sure give us an example of those individuals who are candidates for a stay at a crisis center, admission to one of these youth crisis or community crisis beds.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Senator Perkins, probably the best example that leaps to mind is a child that one of our staff may get called out on. Go out to the home and find out that there is literally a crisis, some type of a crisis occurring in the family, in the home environment, and that staff, probably in conjunction with the family, agrees that that child is in danger of abuse or neglect as a result of the crisis that's going on, and then that child, it's basically put into a crisis bed for a day or 15 days in order to provide some respite and to get some services in place to keep that family together.
And it could also be there if police had found a child that was in crisis or moved a child from a home that was in crisis as well. Is that right?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, absolutely. The law enforcement can pick a child up 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning, not be able to locate the parents, and place that child in a crisis bed until appropriate arrangements can be made. Correct.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Senator.
So what types of individuals would not be candidate? These are typically youth, but what type of youth would not be eligible for a crisis bed? What? In other words, usually it's going to be because there's a violent or there's a medical episode or a psychotic episode or something that makes them not an appropriate candidate for a crisis bed. Is that right?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, you're very correct. It would be, as mentioned earlier, it would be children who are youth, not necessarily children only, but youth who are a danger to themselves or somebody else, probably primarily, and for whatever reason, they are a danger to themselves or somebody else. That would be the bulk of the kids that wouldn't be appropriate. You certainly don't want them mixing with other kids, even though they are in a supervised setting. And obviously, the crisis beds aren't treatment providers. And if you have a child with psychosis or any other type of a mental health issue, it wouldn't be necessarily an appropriate placement. It may be for lesser issues than severe and persistent mental illness such as schizophrenia or other types of psychoses, but you may put them there until you get them treatment, just a couple of days maybe. But for the very severe things, you would probably put those children and youth up at WBI up in the Casper area, or some may need to go into a JDC, a juvenile detention center, to protect them and the community.
Yeah. Chairman, and that would be because their own behavior is violent, or the crisis could be that there's actually a commission of a violent crime or something like that. I mean, those are the reasons you go to JDC, not just because the kid is. I mean, we don't dump kids in JDCs anymore.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, that is absolutely correct. And nor was it ever appropriate to do that. And I'm pleased to report to the committee that our detention numbers are significantly down since 2006. Our youth detention numbers are significantly down. Since 2006, I believe that the number there is that we've experienced an 82% reduction in Wyoming. There are kids who need to be detained and incarcerated, and I'm pleased to say that I believe that we're much more appropriate with the kids that we do that with.
Okay. Mr. Chairman? Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And maybe it's Brett or maybe it's our staff or possibly DFS, but I'm looking again at those object codes under protective services. And just one particular count on your 600 series report to us, it's 0624, and you show $15 million. And I go to your budget on page 20, 0624, I show zeros. So I'm just trying to figure out, and maybe I'm missing something, which sure could be the case, but why you're showing it here as being spent to that code, object code 0624, yet in your budget, 0624 shows zeros.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chair, that those 0624 expenditures, they travel a little bit between the 600 series as necessary, and they actually are also involved in under the Juvenile Justice Unit 5904. So those expenditures are included in both 5902 and 5904.
So what you're saying, what you're saying under protective services for the kids, it's not here because it shows up in another budget under the same object code. Is that what you're saying?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chair, that is correct.
Okay. When we get to that, just point that out so I can see it. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman. Representative Moniz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director Corsi, actually, I have visited with the two ladies sitting behind you, and we had quite a discussion. They are operating or have been operating at a loss on a per-bed basis, and I understand that you have in the past reverted money back out of that fund. Could you explain to us how is that a rule within your department on how they're funded and what they can do to recoup some of their losses there? If you could explain that to us, I'd appreciate it.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I'm not aware of what their loss is specifically. However, as we get into our units, I'm trying to think of where that's located. It's probably, well, it's either in protective services or juvenile services, probably juvenile services. As we get in there, you'll see we're going to go through an explanation of how rates are set. Those are according to what's called a Navigant study. It's conducted by Navigant organization. And we're going to be proposing to this committee that we, even though Navigant suggested to us that we reduce residential treatment center rates across Wyoming, we're proposing as a department that we do not do that. And that's an effort on our part to help our providers and make sure that those services stay in place. As well as that, Navigant did recommend a group home rate increase, and we're proposing that we follow that recommendation and increase the group home rate. So that should help a little bit. With regard to your question about reversion, I don't know off the top of my head how much money or if money was reverted out of that category in previous bienniums. I don't know the answer to that. I can tell you that that funding tends to come out of court-ordered placement service dollars, and we spend a lot of money, about $50 million a biennium, and we're trying to reduce that. In fact, through conversations with our providers, we're trying to reduce lengths of stay, and we're also trying to reduce the numbers of youth who go into placement, which speaks to something Senator Perkins was talking about a few moments ago. We think as a department that there, in fact, I had a conversation with a judge up in the Casper area yesterday who called me and said, Steve, I'm getting a lot of pressure to place kids. And one example was a kid who was in possession, a middle school kid who was in possession of oregano, and the school expelled them. And the multidisciplinary team wanted this child to go into residential placement. And, of course, my comment was, I'm not sure that possession of oregano is a crime. So we're trying to reduce inappropriate placements, such as that one, and yet make sure that we have those kids who need to be in placement. We're also working with the providers, these specifically, in fact, to try to develop other services across the state, outpatient services and other community-based services. The hope is that as we work with those providers to develop those services, we're happy to pay for that. And as we see placements and lengths of stay go down, they should see, and their revenues decrease on that side, they should see their revenues increase on the outpatient side, and that's what we're trying to work toward. I hope that answered your question, Representative.
Okay.
I guess we'll see. Right now, are they paid on a per-bed basis? Is that correct? What they're...
Mr. Chairman, Representative... The answer is twofold. Community crisis beds, these providers behind us specifically, I'd rather call them Nicole and Sharon, since I keep referring to them in the third person, I think. But specifically, they have funding two different ways, maybe even more than that. But the two relevant to this committee are they're paid on a per-bed basis, which is $97 per day for community crisis beds. That's whether there is a youth in that bed or not. And then, is that correct, Nicole? Thank you. I wanted to make sure I didn't say something wrong here. And the other way that they're paid is for their group home beds that are occupied, or their residential treatment center beds that are occupied. Currently, those rates are $133 per day for a group home bed and $175 per day for a residential treatment center bed. So they're paid both per bed and per day, if that makes sense.
Just one more question.
Sure.
And how do you arrive at those figures?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that goes back to the Navigant study that I was mentioning earlier, that we contract with an outside entity. In fact, that my understanding historically, that happened before I arrived, but my understanding historically is that the providers asked for a more objective perspective than an arbitrary decision on the department's part. And so we contract with, I believe it's called Navigant Organization. I know that we call it the Navigant Study. And periodically they examine the rates across the state. They examine costs, revenues, everything going on statewide. And I believe they also examine rates in the surrounding states or similar states to determine what the appropriate rates are. And then based on their recommendations, along with conversations that we have with the providers, we either go with those recommendations or don't. Today we are hoping to not go with a recommendation for a reduction and to go for a recommendation for an increase.
Mr. Chairman, give me those three rates real quick, like again.
Mr. Co-Chair, what was the question?
Just
again?
Give me those three rates real quick, like.
Yes, sir. Crisis beds are 97 per day.
Got that right.
Occupied or unoccupied.
Right.
Group home is 133 per day. Residential treatment centers are 175 per day.
Correct. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Stubson.
Mr. Chairman, Director Corsi, what about as far as supply or availability? I know you said that you're not aware of anybody being turned away from a crisis bed, but is that 81? Do you believe that's the right number as far as, and then also I would imagine these beds are concentrated in different places around the state, and so there's not uniform availability across the state. So are you guys making any efforts to expand geographically the availability of beds and the number? Is that a good number or not?
Mr. Chairman. Representative Stubson, you bring up a great question. Nick, did we provide this map to the JAC? We did not. We have a map of the crisis beds located across the state. We would be happy to provide that to the committee that shows where they're located and who has those beds. Representative, you're asking a question that we've began to discuss internally within the department. We've discussed it a little bit just in a cursory fashion with providers and need to do that more with providers. Your question was specific to crisis beds, and you said, do we have enough of those across the state? I think we could have more, and I think within our department we think we could have more. However, we want to do that in a way that is appropriate for the state without increasing the bottom line for the department. And as we go, if this committee permits, I'd like to take you back to a conversation, I believe, from last year or the year before, where we looked at the number of group home and residential treatment center beds across the state. I believe that the number is somewhere around 460 residential beds that we have across the state in any given day. about 170 of those are occupied. It's one of the reasons that this committee established a moratorium on residential beds and the creation of additional residential beds is because we're already well over 100% overbuilt. However, going back to your question, Representative, I think that we can, through some conversation with our providers, I think that we can make some cost-neutral adjustments, reduce potentially the number of residential beds, residential treatment center beds, or group home beds, and increase the numbers of crisis beds to more effectively utilize our state resources. That's very preliminary, and obviously will take substantial discussion with our providers and with the other folks in our department. Does that answer your question, sir?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Escobel is next, and then Representative Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director Corsi, on the issue of crisis beds is what constitutes a family crisis or a child in crisis. Wasn't in this state, but there was a pretty wealthy family that the feds and the IRS agents picked up on tax evasion, and the wife was taken into custody as well just because she signed the return, and there was a 3- and 4-year-old in the house. Wouldn't that be a typical case of a child being in crisis?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Esquivel, that could very well be a crisis case.
Okay. Representative Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Director Corsi and Mr. Chairman, would it be useful if you could provide us in addition to the map that you have on where the crisis beds are, the occupancy rates of those each individual location over the course of the last several years, and so we know how many of those beds are being used in different locations, and the same with residential beds, so that when you get to your cost-neutral adjustment, we can have a better understanding of the whys and wherefores to do it. And plus, it would be interesting information for us to have, I think.
Mr. Chairman, okay. Representative Nicholas, we'd be happy to do that. We do have that data within the department, and I don't know if this is appropriate or not, Mr. Chairman, but can Nick provide this map to somebody who can make copies to
Absolutely.
The committee?
Absolutely, we can make copies of that. If we could get copies of that, we'll stamp it, number it, and great, thank you. Is that a colored?
Yes, sir, it is.
I think we got, Don's got, okay, thanks, Don.
Where are we at?
Okay, any other questions? I think we're, Senator Perkins, open that up.
I'll be brief. Just a quick clarification. When you said that on the crisis beds, you said those were occupied, or that rate is paid whether they're occupied or not. Did that apply to the group home and residential treatment, or is that only on an as-used basis?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, the occupied or unoccupied rate is for crisis beds only.
All right, yeah. Thank you.
Okay, continue.
Mr. Chairman, if the committee will move to page 25, this is our juvenile services unit, juvenile justice. This unit seeks to improve the outcomes for juveniles at risk and help maintain community safety. And at the bottom of the first paragraph, you'll notice that the program provides services to approximately 2,640 youth annually. And in the next paragraph, that approximately 725 juveniles are on probation in Wyoming at any given time. At the bottom of that second paragraph is the information about the rates, and also about Navigant. The Navigant recommendation for the residential treatment centers was for a decrease from 175 per day to 164 per day. The Department of Family Services does not support that decrease and would like to retain the rate of 175 per day as it currently is. Navigant also suggested to increase the group home and BOCES basic rate from 133 per day to 141 per day. And we concur with that recommendation and have included that in this budget proposal.
Mr. Chairman?
Where's it at? Oh, Senator Dockstader.
Director, what was the discussion on maintaining that rate? Just a little bit of background, please, on that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dockstetter, do you mean our discussion on not going with the reduction recommendation?
Mr. Chairman, correct.
Senator, having been a former provider and knowing the reductions that the state has gone through and increased costs that the providers do experience and have to experience in order to retain good quality staff, and knowing that they are lean and mean, as we are, we would just not like to decrease their revenues by that small amount.
Chairman?
Senator Perkins.
Follow up on that, Mr. Chairman. Be interested to know, ultimately what you have is this is a part of the safety net for juveniles, and is there information that you have that would indicate that the safety net private providers in this are financially strapped such that they couldn't absorb this, or what? You know, I understood your reason and said they were lean and mean, but the other side of that is I think that just be interested in if you have information that would help us understand that this actually would be detrimental to the safety net that's provided, or whether it's just because you think they should have more.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, one of the philosophies that I operate under is that it's never the wrong time to do the right thing, and I believe it is the right time, or it is the right thing, to leave this rate in effect. I think to reduce it, we don't have any concrete data. I suppose we could dig some up, but I think to reduce it, we would have to take a look at what the net effect of that financially would be. For us, more importantly, I think, or at least equally importantly, I think the providers, let me back up, as a provider, I know how difficult it is to recruit qualified, competent professional staff that is of high character and quality, and my concern would be that we don't want to diminish that, which would then diminish the quality of services provided to youth and families. Senator, did that kind of answer your question? If you would like some data, we can dig some up and provide it to the committee.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm sympathetic, but Mr. Chairman, my concern is simply, I mean, and we'll see this not just in this area. This is just kind of the tip of an iceberg that we'll see kind of a recurring theme as we talk about some of the different placements that come up in your budget. But ultimately what we've done is we've replaced significantly out-of-home placements over the last number of years. And so, as a result of that, I mean, there's actually been providers that go out of business because simply we're not providing – we're not providing the numbers of out-of-home placements so those services, there's less of the services required, and eventually some providers have actually gone out of business. But ultimately, there's an evaluation of determining, Mr. Chairman, where the safe, you want to have the safety net, but if ultimately we're successful in reuniting families and reducing the number of out-of-home placements, that's going to cause a thinning of those ranks. And so my concern is that we're not keeping these numbers inflated artificially where the market's going to drive a winnowing of the providers. Now, I know that sounds harsh, but I'm trying to find the balance between doing the right thing for the state and maintaining the safety net that we need. So, if you can provide some info, I'm interested in why. Like I say, I understand you believe it's the right thing to do with respect to the rates, and I can respect that. But nevertheless, we have our right thing is to make sure that the state gets every bang for the buck that it possibly can.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, I would go back to an earlier conversation that we've had this morning, and that is that as we seek to reduce out-of-home placements, or out-of-community placements even more correctly, and as we seek to reduce lengths of stay, the providers are going to and probably have already seen some decreasing revenues. We do know that we are overbuilt, as I mentioned before, in beds. as you mentioned, it's a careful balancing act. We want to make sure that services are available. We also want to make sure that they're appropriate. We think by keeping that rate there that we can kind of help provide a little bit of that balance and still achieve our other goals of reducing placements and reducing lengths of stay and ensuring that youth get quality services. Mr. Chairman, if we can move to, I believe we're on page 27. Is that correct, Nick?
Yeah.
On page 27, priority number 9, this is, within our juvenile services unit, we're requesting to increase this unit by $140,830 and one full-time position. You'll be seeing a corresponding decrease in our childhood development unit, that's unit 6020, in our next appropriation. Basically, this is the central registry. This position is a central registry position and is already being supervised by this unit. So we want to move this employee from early childhood into this unit and the funding that goes with that so that we align the dollars and the tasks with the correct appropriation.
Okay. Next. Priority 10.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page 28, priority number 10, this goes back to the conversation about units 5902 and then this unit 5904 in the Wyoming Boys School and the Girls School. Here what we're requesting is to move $340,000 of general fund out of this unit into the boys' school to offset the loss of federal funds at the boys' school and then increase the federal funding here through our increased penetration rate with the 4E federal funding for foster care kids.
Okay.
Oh, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, go ahead. Mr. Co-Chair, you had asked a question about the $15 million in the 0624 series. This unit captures some of those costs as well. In those 624, you'll notice $1.7 million there. We have, I'm making a little bit of an assumption here, we have transferred some of the dollars in 0623 to the 0624 to properly codify those expenditures.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, you have to because 0624 is way underfunded, and 0623 is way overfunded. And that is that an ongoing thing that happens just given the nature of how you provide the juvenile justice money? Is that how that works? You can work between those two codes?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chair, that is correct. Depending on the needs of the kid, we codify those expenditures accordingly.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Hi, Don.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Thanks. I just wanted to jump in and help out, too. I think the expenditures are likely paid out of that 0624 line item, and you can see that on the Chapter 17 in the actual expenditures as they come in from your budget. I think just what's happening here is that the budget hasn't caught up with the actual expenditures, but they are in the same service line item.
Okay. Okay, next.
Mr. Chairman, if we can move to page 34.
Yep.
This is unit.
Hold on 1 second, Mr. Chairman. Real quick, like on page 31, there's a difference, again, between the narrative and the actual budget. Is this one of those that we need to
yes, sir.
Correct? And I guess on all of these, is that something staff will correct, make these corrections, just where we're off between the narrative and the budget? Are we just, it's not a big amount of money. Are we just going to leave it alone? How are we going to handle that?
Mr. Chairman, it's simply in the narrative. All of the information is correct in the tables, which is what you actually
act upon.
The tables
is what is
okay.
Key. Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry to – I'm not going to beat this dead horse any longer, but I'm just wondering if we could get on the RTC rate, BOCES rate, that was 175, Navigant thought it could be 141. If we could get the difference in what the budget is with respect – whether it's 175 or 141.
Director?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, I'd like to correct that. If I stated Navigant recommended 141, I was incorrect. Navigant recommended a change In the residential treatment center rate from 175 to 164, is that correct? To 164, yeah, an $11 a day change. They also recommend, and that was a decrease, that obviously. They recommended for group home beds an increase of $8 from 133 to 141. We support both. We support the increase recommendation and not the decrease.
Right. And Mr. Chairman, I'm requesting the on that $11 difference, how much is that in the budget? I just want to know that number.
You can get back to us with that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you have that question?
Mm-hmm. Okay, next.
Moving to page 34, Mr. Chairman. This is the Wyoming Boys School. And
funds
this
program?
Yes, sir. This is an exception request to increase general fund at the Wyoming Boys School by $340,527 and to decrease the federal funding through the elimination of the school lunch program by $340,000.
Okay, I think we understand. Next. This is another number 10.
Are you on page 39, Mr. Chairman?
I am.
Thank you.
Just do this. We move pretty quick. We do quicker than your...
That's maybe we need to move to a computer model. Mr. Chairman, this is, let me see, this is basically that same request.
Same request for the girls' school.
Yes, sir.
Correct?
Yes, sir.
Any questions, members? Okay, next.
Moving to page 43, this is unit 5908. This is the Wyoming Children's Trust Fund Board. This board's purpose is to award grants to communities for the development of child abuse and neglect prevention programs. It funds family and child mentoring programs, parenting classes, services to at-risk youth, and programs designed to reduce child abuse and neglect. And if you'll move to page 44, you'll see that there are no exception requests for this unit.
Next.
On page 46, this is unit 5909, or this is the last unit, I believe, in this appropriation, our substance abuse prevention and treatment unit. In fiscal 2013, the program administered over 787 urinalysis tests, with approximately 18% of those returning positive. This unit focuses on early assessment and identification for treatment needs of the intensive supervised probation youth and corresponding referrals for treatment. And continues to work through contracts to provide drug and alcohol services to youth within the juvenile justice system. On page 47, Mr. Chairman, you'll notice that there is no exception request for this unit.
Yep. Next, then.
We'll now move to our 600 appropriation, which is our assistance appropriation. On page 51, our first unit is welfare reform, 6015. This unit provides eligibility across all the agency's public assistance programs. And on page 52, you'll notice once again that there is no exception request for this unit.
Mr. Chairman?
Co-chair.
Mr. Chairman, this is TANF. And the question I have under your maybe I'm in the wrong. I'm looking at 0626. Object code of your 600 series. Maybe this is not the place where it comes up. Where would the TANF money be?
There is about 15, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chair, there is about $15.7 million in TANF dollars here, as you'll see down below.
Yeah, and we have, there again, maybe it's just a code differential because you have 0611 is where you got the money, and then 0626 is where you show in your 600 series. So just maybe you could help clarify that. Then the other specific question is the Eastern Shoshone are substantially less than the Northern Arapaho. And is that based on just pure numbers? And maybe you could help me out. Is it because there's so many fewer tribal members that are receiving it on the Shoshone side, or – or with why is there such a discrepancy there? If you could just, or do you know?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chair, I'm not sure what you're referring to there. What
your
number?
600 series.
Okay.
The report you provided to us under object code 0626 The Eastern Shoshone, 365,000. The Northern Arapahoe, 1.6 million. And I'm just curious why the substantial difference. And you can get that back to me when you have a chance. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Senator Perkins?
Thanks. Just back in the TANF, in your narrative, you talked about the number of cases, these child-only cases, 57%. One child receiving SSI income, the other, or residing with a relative. And I'm just would that be like a child living with an aunt or an uncle or a grandparent that receives TANF assistance because of the presence of that child in the home? Is that what we're talking about?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, I believe you're correct. We can verify that, though, get that information back to the committee. But I do believe you're correct.
Okay. Next.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to stay with page 52 for a moment. I missed something there, and that's the governor's recommendation, and that is for a reduction in general fund of $10,000, federal funds for $110,000, and one full-time position. This was a benefit specialist, BEBP06, and this was one of the frozen positions. This goes back to the caseload discussion that I think I was having with Representative Stubson, I think, earlier. So, and we concur with that recommendation, obviously. Moving to page 56, this is the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program Unit, Unit 6016. You'll notice about a third of the way down the page, priority number three, this is the exception request for $13.9 million, half of which is general fund, half of which is federal funds, for the Wyoming Eligibility System Phase 2. The Wyoming Department of Health is in the final stages of Phase 1 right now, building the platform, and this $13.9 million will allow DFS to modernize and basically plug and play with the Department of Health's platform to provide 24-hour access, online applications, and improved customer service for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, as well as we hope to capitalize on this and be able to use this for child care eligibility, and Senator Perkins, I'm sure, will be pleased to hear that, as well as our POWER program, which is basically welfare reform in the state of Wyoming. If you'll look,
co-chair, I think that's.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, and I'm just not sure where this pops up, but it's sensible nutrition education, and we're talking about nutrition here. Check to the University of Wyoming for almost $2 million. Is that in this budget? And is I guess that's for nutritional education at the state university. I'm trying to figure out what that's for.
Mr. Co-chair, that the sensible nutrition program is provided for by the federal government. They provide a chunk of funding for that. It's basically to provide nutritional education to SNAP, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program recipients across the state. There is a representative in each county. We contract for that service with the University of Wyoming, and that should be in this budget. I'm kind of looking to Nick to make sure it is. I can't imagine where else it would be. It should be.
Well, so we contract with the university to provide statewide. Help me out.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator?
What they do is they go out to the counties, and they're usually funded through as part of the ag extension offices, usually where those things happen at. So they actually conduct classes for SNAP recipients. So at your Ag Extension office, which is generally funded by the university, they're holding these common sense nutritional classes. And what they do is they teach, like, people on food stamps how to shop, how to actually make groceries and make meals as opposed to
instead
buy
of Pepsi's,
stuff. Instead of buying
10
you know, going
of
to
Pepsi
Sam's Club
and lobster.
And buying, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman,
go ahead.
And Mr. Co-Chair, I want to clarify just a little bit. Non-SNAP recipients can attend those classes as well. In fact, my wife went through one a year and a half ago, and she said, boy, I learned all kinds of things that saved us a bunch of money at the grocery store. So,
how do you know about that, Senator?
I got to attend one of those.
Ah.
Multiple hats. Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Stubbs.
Going back to your exception request for the eligibility and enrollment system, down under the Govs Rec, it talks about ongoing maintenance costs that they anticipate for the 2017-2018 biennium in the amount of $684 in general funds. And the question I have, I guess, is that an anticipated cost sort of ad infinitum going forward, or is that just for that next biennium?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stepson, I believe that is a cost going forward. Nick, do you want to address that? Nick's kind of twitching over here, so I think he wants
Hey, Nick.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stepson, that is correct. That is an ongoing cost that will be so the entire maintenance cost will not be found in the 15-16 budget, because we're not going to be maintaining that system the entire time, and those are additional costs that will be incurred going forward.
Okay, next. We're going to go a couple more minutes here and then take a break. We're going to get done in 2 hours, so just have to set your watch back if we don't make it. So,
Mr. Chairman, I could push us through this in about the next 5 minutes if you would like.
Okay. I'm not so sure that's going to happen, but go ahead, give it a whirl. We'll see how you do.
Mr. Chairman, we do concur on page 57 with the governor's recommendation. At the bottom of that page is priority number 6. This is a request on our part for $95,399 for computer software, and this is software that, as I mentioned earlier, is used in system servers, networks, and employee computers.
Okay.
Moving to page 60, page 60, Mr. Chairman, want to point out some employee numbers, and this should go to a couple of the committee's questions earlier. This is still within our Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program unit, and you'll notice that the base budget, we had 90 employees, and the governor's recommendation here is 117 employees. Basically, what we're wanting to do is to move positions from 6018, which is our medical eligibility determination unit, so that we can continue providing services to SNAP, power, and child care with regard to eligibility. And some of these positions are Price QC, which is our fraud detection and investigation and enforcement unit. There are also fiscal services division staff and training and policy staff. So we're just asking to realign that staff appropriately.
They're going to move where they're currently being used and be able to, this is where more of the work's at?
Yes, sir. And this also involves the transition of Medicaid eligibility from the Department of Family Services to the Department of Health.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Any questions? Okay, great. Next.
Moving to page 62, this is our Child Support Enforcement Unit. You'll see an exception request, priority number 5, for $311,000. $196,000 of that is for computer software, $115,000 for computers. The software is necessary to maintain the day-to-day operation of the Child Support Enforcement computer system, and the computers are used for child support enforcement by the districts and by the clerks of district court. Their current computers are over 4 years old and have ended their service life and will no longer be supported by the manufacturer. On page 63, you'll notice that the governor has recommended approval of that, and this request has also been approved by multiple OCIO recommendations, and we concur. Below that, priority number 7 is an exception request for $520,000. This is for our web enablement project. This will help us to provide enhanced customer service, real-time information for citizens paying or receiving child support, what they owe, what they received, and they can access those services 24 hours a day through this system, or will be able to. You'll notice on page 64 that request was also approved by OCIO.
Mr. Chairman, are you going to design your website and then have them just comment on it, or are you going to use them to do it and you comment on it?
Mr. Co-Chair, do you mean ETS?
Yes, excuse me, ETS. Are you going to design it? They're going to say it looks good. Or are they going to design it and you're going to like what they've done? Who's going to be the more or less responsible for it?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chair, I believe that we are going to do some of this work in-house with some of our staff and also with a contractor.
Mr. Chairman.
And
Representative Escobar.
Where was I? Mr. Chairman and Director Corsi, with this new software, notice that one of the problems we were having with catching up on arrears, and as long as the minimum payments are being made, it doesn't seem like there's an effort to really go after arrears. Will this at least give us another tool to maybe try and collect on some of that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Esquivel, I would think that this would help us with that. I'm not 100% certain that this would help us with that. I would think it would. I believe that, and maybe I shouldn't even say this, I might be speaking out of turn, but I believe Senator Ross is considering some legislation along those lines that will assist with that as well. I could be wrong on that. I know that he has been in discussions with our department about child support legislation, and I believe it will assist with that as well. I can tell you that our staff is very committed to collection on the arrears. Obviously, they have to do that within the law, but are pretty aggressive with that. Constant and continual and relentless improvement is what we're always after.
Chairman?
Okay. Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director and Mr. Chairman, Director, and if I understand the interplay between child support enforcement and assistance that is given to families in the state in some respects, there's a correlation between the more successful that we are in child enforcement that actually has an effect on the amount of aid that the state requires to give to single parents oftentimes. Isn't that correct?
Mr. Chairman. Senator Perkins, that's absolutely correct.
Okay. Okay, continue.
On page 64, if we can move there, we're back to that web enablement $520,000 exception request. Just wanted to point out that that was also approved by the OCIO.
Okay.
Moving to page 68. This is our medical eligibility determination unit, number 6018, and we're requesting deletion of this unit. And the associated funding of $1.69 million in general fund and $846,000 in federal funds. This is part of that move in Medicaid eligibility from our department to the Department of Health.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Co-chair.
Mr. Chairman, real quick, like I'm just tracking it, and I understand that the 12 physicians that leave here, they go to Department of Health. Department of Health will show a corresponding increase. You started with your base budget of 49, and then you've added to child support from 90 to 117 of 27. The numbers don't add up. I'm trying to track and just provide that to us, and I'm sure it's going to come out right so we can see how the positions flow through, where you started, where they went, and where they end up.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chair, I'm about to ask to move to page 71, and I think you'll get an explanation of that on page 71, if I may proceed.
Mr. Chairman, before we go further right there, just from your perspective, or if you've had any feedback, how is that transfer and in particular the customer service how's that been affected by the transfer? Good, bad, or about the same, or if you have any feedback?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, about the only way I know to be is frank. I think it was a great idea, and I still think it's a great idea, and I think it's going well at this point. There have been a few bumps along the way. Things that we needed to learn within our department and things that the Department of Health needed to learn within theirs. I think overall it's been pretty successful. And we are at this point, not without its challenges is my point, but successful nonetheless. We are at this point, I believe, about 75 to 80% complete with that transition, and it's going well.
Okay.
On page 71, Mr. Co-Chair, specifically, if you look at those employees, you'll see the base budget of 49 and the governor's recommendation of zero. 27 of those 49, and I want to make sure that I answer your question. I think this is what you were asking. 27 of those 49 are moving to our SNAP unit, 6017, which is the 90 to the 117. 10 of these 49 are going to the early childhood unit, which is 6020, and then 12 of them moved to the Department of, yes, sir, to the Department of Health.
Got it.
Moving to page 74, and Mr. Chairman, we're getting really close to completion here.
Yeah, we can all feel it.
Moving to page 74, this is our supplemental security income unit. This unit serves disabled and elderly individuals who qualify for federal Social Security income and have no other income. The unit provides payments to recipients to supplement their daily living expenses for basic needs. And as you can see, those payments aren't much if you look just below there. And we make an average of 3,369 payments per month. We're also on page 75. There is no exception request for this unit. On page 76.
Next. Yeah.
Nope. On page 77, this is our early childhood development unit, 6020. This unit is responsible for daycare licensing, assistance to low-income working families to help them cover daycare expenses, and responsible for quality activities, which include training and technical assistance for child care providers. And this also goes back to Representative Esquivel's question about resource and referral for consumer education and referrals to parents for licensed child care. Moving to page 78. We have an exception request here. This is priority number two. Nick, do you want to take this one? I'm a little bit lost.
No.
You don't want to take it. All right. I will take it. Let me sort through this a little bit.
You were itching. You're not itching anymore. Yeah.
We're requesting a deletion of general fund for $1.9 million. We're also requesting an increase in federal fund for a corresponding amount. This is for maintenance costs, not for positions, but for maintenance costs going forward, and I believe that is for the Wyoming eligibility system. Is that correct, Nick? Correct. And you should be, if you look at the bottom of paragraph one, you should be seeing a Department of Health corresponding request to increase their general fund appropriation in a like amount to help fund the maintenance costs as well. So Director Forslund and I agreed, since they took this into their department, that we would initially help fund that transition.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Nicholas.
I just have a question about this, Director. It looks to me like you're replacing general fund dollars with federal fund dollars. So you retain $1.9 million, but also then in the Department of Health budget, they have a $1.9 million request. So it's the there's not, in other words, there's an extra $1.9 million out there for the biennium, and you both get it. So that's what I'm just curious about. Does that make sense, or is it?
It does make
sense.
And
if so, why?
Can you speak to that, Nick?
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, yeah.
Representative Nicholas, that is correct. We're requesting an increase in our TANF spending authority of $1.9 million, and we're going to reduce our $1.9 million of general fund and transfer that to the Department of Health for the maintenance of that eligibility system.
He wants to know why we're increasing the $1.9 in federal funding.
These are funds that historically – I don't know the answer to that. I'm going to have to get back to you. I apologize.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, Representative Nicholas, and Nick, please correct me if I'm wrong here. As we go through this transition, a little discussion's in order. So eligibility specialists manage the eligibility for Medicaid, for Power, for SNAP, and for child care, and they're spread throughout various units. And I hope I'm not incorrect here. I don't believe I am. As we go through this transition, we need to sort through how many of those we actually need and how many maybe through turnover or retirement that we may be able to downsize once we get successfully and completely through that transition. And I believe that, as I recall, this $1.9 million will help fund some of those positions staying in the department until we can sort through that and make sure that we're staffed appropriately. Is that correct, Nick?
I don't know the answer to that. That sounds appropriate.
Okay. I believe that is correct.
Okay.
We can certainly clarify that, though.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, could you please and justify it as well? So.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Okay, thanks. Okay, next.
Mr. Chairman, at the bottom of page 78 is priority number 9. This is a request to reduce this unit, 6020. This is the central registry discussion that we had earlier, to reduce this unit by $140,000 and one full-time position. And there is a corresponding request that we already went through in the juvenile services unit. Basically, we're moving the central registry function and position from this unit to juvenile services. Moving to page 84, this is our last unit, and this is the energy assistance and weatherization unit. And you'll notice that there is no exception request in this unit. And then the final part of the presentation, Mr. Chairman, is on page 88. And here I need some clarification. I'm not sure if this is a capital construction request. I'm not sure if we present this or if the budget division does. Laura or Brett?
Well,
we're happy
it'll
to.
It'll come in another part. Hasn't been talked about. But I guess if you'd like to share with the committee what you think of any need, or if the committee has any questions of need or those kind of things. Some folks have visited the facility, kind of know what you're talking about. Many of us haven't. So. Members, I'd say, does anyone first have any questions of this CAPCOM proposal?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Escobel.
And Senator Dockstetter and I did actually tour this facility with the director this summer, and just wanted to point out that we actually approved the funding a couple of years ago, and it didn't end up getting funded. So we're here today at this point now, but during that tour, we both found the reason for the need, I guess, to make this a short comment that wanted the director.
Mr. Chairman,
go ahead,
if I may, if you'll go to page 88 with me, the current school building was constructed in 1965. I think that's 48 years, is that right? Or something like that, 48 years old. That school building is too small to accommodate up to the 100 youth who could be in residence at any given time. This summer it was 97, as I recall. Due to the lack of classroom space, about 40% of those students are currently educated in one of the two dormitories, as opposed to being educated in the school. Additionally, and you'll see that line, the age and the condition of the building requires continual piecemeal funding requests for remedial life and safety code upgrades and repairs. And then 3 points within the scope of work that we'd like to focus the committee on are number 3, number 4, and number 8, that this $13.1 million, is to construct a new school building, to reroute and connect all the utilities, and to construct new security, IT, and telephone systems for the new school, as well as include updates to the existing systems as required to interface with the rest of the campus. I don't know what my time at the Department of Services as the director will be, but I sure know that I'd like to see this completed before I leave. Again, it's the right thing to do for these boys and for Wyoming.
Okay. Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I didn't tour with Director Corsi, but I did tour it a couple of years ago, and that school would be, in fact, they would swap for a lot of schools we're tearing down, would be a significant upgrade for that old school building.
Okay, that's a statement. Nice statement. Okay, and your question.
Well, it's just that comment. I mean, I've been out to that place too, and that gymnasium needs a significant reface. It's an interesting place. Some interesting things out there. I mean, a lot of those kids when they show up there, Mr. Chairman, you can probably appreciate this, can't do a push-up. I mean, physically, those kids are physically and mentally, those kids are usually at a pretty low, you know, we see a few movies and think these are buff, tough kids, and they have tough exteriors, but physically they're in bad shape. They haven't, their nutrition's poor, their conditioning is poor. They need, and so, you know, we need to do this. I guess, Mr. Chairman, my question might be, is why would this be out of general fund and not a school foundation account?
Director?
Mr. Chairman, did you want me to respond to that?
Sure. I don't have an answer, and maybe somebody in budget. Actually, hold on a minute. Brett, what do you have for us on that?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that question was examined last time this project was proposed, and I was not intimately involved in the discussions that occurred at the time. There appears to be some question of constitutionality or legality associated with the use of school foundation funds for this purpose.
Mr. Chairman?
Well, it's to build a school that's in our institutional system.
Yeah.
That's the issue.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Our institutions are supported separately. Senator Meyer.
I'm just kind of looking at here. I see that we're going to demolish and remove the old school structure, but I didn't see any temporary structures. I'm trying to figure out how you're going to, you know, provide the programming and education when you're tearing down one. What's your battle plan, I guess?
Mr. Chairman.
I'm sure you've got a plan. Huh?
Senator Meyer, unless I'm incorrect, and maybe Representative Esquivel and Senator Dockstetter can help me here, but I believe we're going to continue to educate the boys in the two dormitories and the existing school building while the new one is being built in a different place. Two buildings. Once that's constructed, then my understanding is that the old one will be raised.
Senator Hastert and Senator Dockstetter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director Corsi, is the school under the and the curriculum under the Department of Education control or oversight? I guess oversight.
Director?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Senator Hastert, we'll need to verify that. I believe the answer is yes. We have to hire certified teachers and highly qualified teachers, just like other schools. I believe that our curriculums are approved by the Wyoming Department of Education.
You'd think there'd be some kind of, with these corridor plates, there'd be some kind of payment from the district, or we have that in our education funding, some of these placements, but go ahead. I don't know.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to, if, you know, the Department of Ed has oversight, and maybe we could get a little more information on why this wouldn't fit under school foundation.
Hey, Director.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hastert, I would like to verify that the Department of Education does have oversight. I'm fairly certain that they do, but not entirely. So I would like to verify that.
Senator Dockstetter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The definition, as we toured it this summer, that came up, and on subsequent phone calls to the director, that it was, as the governor's office mentioned, just came back to definition of how we funded it. And so that's why it's going to general fund. While we were there, they were actually, in addition to using the dormitories, they were using anything that would be considered an open space and turning it into a classroom situation with circled chairs and whatever made it work. They're long overdue. This was considered before. They're long overdue to have this done.
Now, just a quick, the size of this building, I mean, you Did you say you had 64 there today and 88 is what you'd like to have, and you've had over 100 in the last year or two, but 88 is kind of your capacity?
Mr. Chairman, we currently have enrollment of 72. That's as of yesterday.
Okay, 72. I'm looking at, and then 88 is
The campus is designed and staffed for 88, I believe.
And this building will accommodate? At 88?
Up to 100.
Up to 100, so you're going to build a little bigger. Because you'll have up at certain times 100 boys there.
Well, we did have, I believe it was 97 this summer.
So, again, just give us kind of that trend line, those averages for the last several years that we asked about in the opening comments. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I believe you asked for the last 10 years. We'll get that
just
for
kind
you.
Of, so we can kind of see a trend.
You bet.
Any other questions then on the building?
One last one.
I think Representative Wallace and then Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Back to this, which fund we can bring this out. I've done quite a bit of thinking and working on that issue because of my interest in sort of school choice. My understanding of the constitutional issue is it just simply says that no taxpayer dollars shall go to any institution that is not under the complete control of the state. How anyone could argue that this program is not under the complete control of the state is beyond me.
Hey, Brett, maybe you can bring us back a little half-pager on that issue, a real short little primer on that.
Mr. Chairman, we will do some follow-up
on
that information.
Great. Thank you. Mr. Co-Chair.
Yeah, very quickly, and on the reductions you made last year, you had $3.4 million out of Object Code 5904, and I think that's youth services. How did that turn out, and is that working okay? And I know when you did your next budget, you kept that in for 1 year, but not for the full 2 year period.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chair, I apologize for this. I missed part of your question with Senator Hastert's cough. Could you repeat the question? Sorry about that.
No, Mr. Co-Chair.
Sure. And your reductions that you did for us last year in the supplemental budget request, most of it came from Object Code 590 or Unit 5904, which is youth services, and it was $3.4 million. Two parts to the question. One, I know you only did it for 1 year and you didn't biennialize it. And the second thing, how's it working, because we're 6 months or 5.5 months left in this budget cycle?
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Co-Chair, it's working well. This goes back to, I'm looking at a summary of our reductions in front of me, and this goes back to the discussion that we were having about caseloads, staffing patterns. We eliminated a number of leadership positions, as you are aware. I suppose there is one exception to it going well, and that is that we currently don't have a contract with the Northern Arapaho Department of Family Services, although I'm hopeful that we'll get that signed soon. But with exception of that, it's going as well as we expected.
Thank you,
Director. Okay, I think that wraps up. I don't anticipate any callbacks. We'll get some information back, though, before we mark up, and particularly that issue on the school foundation and the CapCon. Okay, we appreciate your good work and your presentation. Well done today. And I think, as we said, Representative Dockstader and Representative Escobel, if they have further questions, they'll contact you for their floor presentation. So keep up the good work. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, members, it's 10 o'clock. So we'll be back in about 10, 15. Okay, we're live.
We're all
chewing. Yeah, we're live. Director Parfit, welcome to JEC, agency number 20 now, Department of Environmental Quality. We originally planned to cut about 2 hours for your agency, so, and you can see the time up there. It's about quarter after 10. And so I know our members will have lots of questions. I think Representative Wallace and Mr. Co-Chair Mebout will present this, your agency. Senator Hochstetter.
Sir, what's made the difference? It seems like two or three years ago we were having regular